children. Not really people in their 30s.
I'll take it. You know what? I'm ready to just complain about anything. So just put a topic in front of me, and I'm ready to complain.
Did you hold that until Paul's agenda item?
What is it?
I don't know. No. It's not mine. It's just not mine.
June 22nd, I think that's fine.
Well, I'm getting more whiny as I get older. Grapey.
No, you don't.
You strike me as a grapey.
Oh.
To everyone else.
No. I swear more than I used
me
to.
Me too. Oh.
I don't, actually, because I used to swear a whole heck of a lot. But.
And now you don't.
Now I
swear a little
bit.
A heck of a lot.
Well, I mean, it is.
This is one of my favorite subjects. How much people swear or don't swear. Sorry, man.
I only do at appropriate times.
So, my new company.
Well, me too.
My new company has like this reputation for excellence and not swearing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you work for Hold LHM, it. You can't run around swearing.
We had the foulest mouth of anybody.
I'm sure Gail doesn't, though. So, yeah. I said the B word in a meeting the other day.
Which word is that exactly?
The one that it says, we were taking personality tests.
Oh,
and
no.
I'm like, I don't need to take this test. And then I said, it's just going to tell me.
No.
But then my boss said the S word in the same meeting.
Oh, good. Okay.
So mine got
that S
covered
word.
Up.
We were never allowed to say the S word in our house.
We were not either.
In fact, even to this
B-word.
Day, I spell it.
Oh, wow.
Logan.
Yeah.
I grew up where you don't say that word.
Are we recording?
Yep.
There's a place like that?
I want this on the record. I swear all the time.
My
Where's
mom
the microphone?
Grew up. I mean, my mom taught my kids that word. Let's start.
Well,
that's a good reminder.
Let's start. Welcome to the work session. First item is Sherry Pace is going to give us a community development update.
Great. So we have been going through some changes in my department. We have two new staff members, Cameron Wright and Sharon Smalden, started in February, end of January, first part of February. Sharon's our new permit technician, as you know, Dina retired, moved to California, and Larry retired and went back down to Cedar City and is working in the private sector in St. George. We also have Sandra Halliday, which I'm not sure if I've introduced any of you to her before. She's our new code enforcement specialist. We moved code enforcement from the police department to the community development department, and she is doing just an awesome
That's
job.
Great.
That's great.
We've had a lot better tracking, at least from my perspective, that I can see, because I could never see the tracking on the other side when it was in the police department under their
makes a lot of sense.
Software program. But she's been terrific in getting cases resolved without having to go to the hearing officer, which is just outstanding, because that's really what our goal is with code enforcement, is to get compliance and not necessarily to collect fines, or not at all to collect fines, should I say. And then, you know, Mackenzie and Allie. Mackenzie just got married this last weekend, so now she's Mackenzie Johnson. But I wanted to keep her name there. So you would recognize it. So I wanted to just go over some of the demographics just to give you a brief overview. I'll kind of go through a few of these slides really quickly so we can get to the more interesting stuff that I think you are waiting to hear about. These are just some of our statistics. So in 2021, we had 789 active business licenses. The city is 8.52 square miles. Let's see, in our housing units, that's an interesting one. We have a total of 7,682 housing units. And we know this because we keep track. We have a very robust spreadsheet with every parcel in the city. And we know which ones are vacant. We know exactly how much vacant inventory we have on lots and on approved multifamily projects. So we know what we've built and what we haven't built yet.
What's your source of data on that? Just
curious. Our building permits.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yes.
I was at a meeting. There was a guy from Clarkfield City Council or one of those. And he was also on the Dais Chamber. and he was complaining about some cities share their business license information with the chamber, some don't. Do we share that information with the chamber, or should we?
I'm sure we could. We, I don't know if they asked. Yeah, I'm familiar with that guy. And, yeah, some cities just send it automatically because it's been requested at some point. It has not been requested from me and or something that the city has me send out at this point. I can contact.
You have a problem doing that?
No. But I will say that the chamber is really active in our businesses, and so it wouldn't surprise me if they,
so they may have had a
if
list
they have a list, and they have certainly have a list of members, and so
maybe they hacked into our database.
But no, there's no problem sharing.
I know
that information.
It's automatic. Everyone send out the businesses. So. You can check with Stacy to find out for sure if there's anything she's doing. An interesting. Statistics, our home ownership rate is 73%, so 73% of our units are home ownership, whether they're a townhome or single family. And then our median household income has gone up to $90,900, and that's updated every May. So we've got the new numbers, that's from 2021, so.
How do we compare, how does that 73% compare to?
To other cities?
Yeah. That seems higher than I would have guessed.
It is a little higher, I think, than some other cities.
What's your source on that? Do you remember?
The source on that was from, or the median household income?
No, the tenure, ownership.
Okay. It's from my spreadsheet, so I know what types of units they are. So they may be rented, but they're an owner-occupied housing unit type.
So if it's a house that someone's renting, it's not counting in that number.
It's not counting in that.
Okay.
So I don't have that broken down. I have housing types that are set up for single families and ownership.
So it is lower.
These are some of the demographics that have come out of the 2020 census. We don't have our numbers until August for our city that breaks down into the city level, but these are some of the state numbers. They've given, this is my estimate of the city of North Salt Lake for a 2022 estimate. So that would be an estimate as of the population of January 1st, 2022. And how I come to that is I know how many housing units we have, I know what our average household size is, and so that is just an equation. I'm interested to see how it holds up when we get the 2020 census to see if we are, if we've dropped in household sizes, or if our number, is pretty good. But that's the number we use for the estimates. And then these just talk about some of the population changes in the state of Utah and the county. So this is the spreadsheet that I keep for my population projections. You can see in this column, these are the actual building permits for individual housing units that we've issued each year. We had some slow years, and 2016 was a little bit slow. We had some inventory that then got built up. We built 249 in 2020 and 259 in 2021. I had predicted that we would build 263, and we built 259. So when I make these predictions for this year that we're going to put in 374 units, it's based on my phone calls to the different developers, the projects that they have, and I ask them how many units they're going to take down per month or in that calendar year. And so that's how I come to those numbers, and I come pretty close because they know how much they're selling, they know how much they're building, because their capacity to build is only so many units per month. They don't want to bring all their units on one, they bought all at one time, so they try to, like Toll Brothers tries to bring 5 units a month to sell, so they have new units starting all over, because they don't have the labor capacity to build more than that at the same time.
And there's some redevelopment assumptions in there too, not just greenfield?
Not for the direct year, so. So
my
projection is just for this year.
Okay.
So I don't know of it, because if somebody came in today with a brand new project that I don't know about, I don't have it in my prediction, but it won't be complete before the end of the year either.
Yeah.
So that's one of the beauties of that. These projected growth rates are from the Kemsey Gardner policy at the University of Utah. And I just put these on here so that we can look and see where we actually landed. So based on their predictions, and they're only broken down to county, they're not broken down into individual cities. So this is Davis County projected growth rate. You need to see it drops as we go down through the years, but we've exceeded those numbers almost every year.
Interesting. Are those the new projections?
I went and updated them. Last month. I have this graph, and it's available if you ever need a graph like this, and I update it yearly when I have my new projections at the beginning of the year. So here's where we are, where we were sitting at the end of 2021 was 24,180. That's our projection, our estimate. Here's our permits by the numbers so that you can kind of see what we've built and in what categories we've built. I broke them out into single family homes, townhomes, which are a type of multifamily, and then multifamily rentals. So those would be the stacked flats, more like the Brighton projects are going in down at Eaglewood Village. That's that category. And we didn't have them broken down previous to that,
sure.
Or we didn't have very many in the data set that we have.
What's the 312 other permits?
Those are, so in this category, so it's everything else. Remodels, water heaters, solar,
okay.
Roof repairs.
Driveway.
Yeah, whatever. Any remodels happens, and then there's other commercial remodels. So then we have new commercial, this is new construction, and these are commercial remodels and signs in this category. So we also keep track of our value, that is our estimated value from the building permits, valuation of those. They're not the same tax valuation that we get from the county necessarily, but they are the valuation as we that we do for building permits. So you can see that we've had some pretty robust years, the last 2 years, adding, you know, 94,000 and 76,000. We're projecting about 90 million.
That's what I was going to say.
10,000 million.
That's because 94,000, that's only a half a house.
Yeah, no. Million.
Basement.
So 2020 was a really big year for the, and I believe that's,
94 million.
You know, Amazon came online on this one in 2021. Oh, but the permit would have been issued in 2023. So here's just a list of everything that we do in the Community Development Department. I won't go through all of this. And we can share this slideshow with you so that you have it. Our biggest one that we do is this one, other duties as assigned. Every time Ken calls me and said, hey, can you do that?
She's talking about
I'll
me.
Figure out how to do it. So we run a small ship. We're a small team, but we all pitch in and help where we can. I'm really proud of my staff. They do a really great job. I think they're all rock stars. They go above and beyond the call of duty every day, and we get compliments all the time. I hope that you hear that back from the community, too, that we are responsive to the citizens and to the builders and try to make the process as understanding. And
I think we benefit greatly from the low hanging fruit next door.
Wow.
I hear about Salt Lake all the time.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Woods Cross.
No. No, I was talking about Salt Lake.
We picked on
Woods Cross last meeting.
Oh yeah. We get calls all the time for people who want us to help them in Salt Lake City. And we have to explain to them that we are the city of North Salt Lake, not the north part of Salt Lake City. Because they can't figure out which phone number to call when they need to call Salt Lake City, so they try us first.
It's such a great name.
Yeah. But we never can. I wanted to just do a little bragging on Allie. She's our long-range planner.
Oh, wow.
And she has, I asked her to do this for me a couple months ago to put together all the grants that she has applied for and that we have won. And so, you know, since 2010, she has got the city over $9 million in grants, almost $10 million.
And so awesome.
Yeah, she
so
just,
awesome.
We've just received the award for the Porter's Landing concrete boat takeout. So that was really exciting. really great work, and I love showcasing that. Okay, so we met with the Planning Commission, sat down with them, and figured out what the priorities they wanted us to work on as far as code. The very first one was not originally on their list. We added that and had to move it up to the priority because it became a priority thanks to the legislature. We do have the water efficient landscape ordinance drafted, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about it after this slide, so that you can see what we're thinking about and start thinking about a question that you're going to have to make a policy decision on. But we have that scheduled to go to the Planning Commission next week, and then hopefully they'll pass it on to you, and it'll come to City Council on the 17th. That is our schedule for that. The second priority, or the first priority previously, is the form-based code. So we, as you know, we have several new planning commissioners, because a couple of you have had to defect and go to the City Council.
Defectors.
And we were up against a challenge that we had stopped in 2020 when COVID hit, and we needed to really pick back up. But as we were regrouping, we really looked at the draft that we had, and it had a lot of general plan type language in it. And so we wanted to reformat it so that it would be simpler, and also put it in the same format as our code, the rest of the land use code, so that it could just fit in as another chapter and not have to be a separate document. And also take out all the shalls and shoulds, or just take out the shoulds and put in shalls.
Or the wills, or the musts.
Yes, we knew that.
I'd be bugged.
We would hear it. So we're trying to do that. So what we've done with the Planning Commission is on April 12th, we set this schedule up for April 12th. We did an overview of the form-based code so that we could introduce the new planning commissioners and refresh the rest of the planning commissioners' memory about what a form-based code is, why we need it, how we got to where we are. April 26th and May 10th, we have reviewed chapters 3 and 4. We did have 5 in there, but 3 and 4 were just too big. So we moved 5 down a week, and actually had to move it another week down because of the water efficient ordinance. So that will be coming back to them on May 24th with chapter 5 for buildings. June 14th we'll do streets, parks, and parking. June 28th we will do the sign chapter. And then we'll spend the month of July revising and inputting all of the feedback that we've gotten and suggestions from the Planning Commission on that. We are planning to have a work session with the City Council on June 3rd, if you are available. That's tentatively, we just said that. August 3rd, that's your August 3rd. And then on August 30th, after that, we have this joint work session and get your feedback and dialogue with the Planning Commission, we want to have a public open house and really introduce it out into the community. We thought we could do that in a webinar format. Open houses don't usually get a lot of people to come here, but we've seen some success with Paul's webinars that he's doing on his project, and we're going to try that out and see what kind of feedback, because we can record it, then people can watch it at their leisure and give us comment prior to the public hearing. But we are planning to take a public hearing September 30th or 13th, and then to the City Council on the 20th of September. In the middle, we try to put in some of the low-hanging fruit that are smaller ordinances that need to be done, but can't be all done at the same time. So we're going to work on the sign code during July and bring that to the Planning Commission on August 22nd. We think this will be a good time because the sign chapter in the form-based code is going to have some features that we want to just implement in the sign code everywhere. Mm-hmm. And so once we've gone through that sign code part in form-based code, it will dovetail right into the rest of the sign code.
Just by cross-referencing? Are you cross-referencing? Yeah.
And we want them to be consistent. We want the signs in the town center to be special, but we have a sign code that really needs some work. And so we'll take some of the good features from that and then update the rest of it so that it makes sense for the rest of the city. It makes sense.
I hope you put an unconstitutional provision on billboards, just saying we will not allow any.
Well, that's what I was about bringing up. Did the Supreme Court just rule on the billboard thing? Or the sign? Oh, no, I guess it was on-premise signs that they just ruled on.
I don't know.
You just regulate them as a sign.
Right. Right.
And you don't have a different category for them, right? And then they're kind of screwed.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. They were just completely protected.
I'm oversimplifying, clearly.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's what I'm hearing.
But we do, just if I might interrupt, though, on with respect to billboards, the city code has specific definitions and spacing requirements, mm-hmm. and we maximized the billboards in the city to the point where there's really no space for any more billboards. Mm-hmm.
We think there's no space.
We think.
Yeah.
I know they'll get creative and figure out.
Yeah, we have been approached, in fact, just this last week,
yeah.
By a company that thinks they can get in between on the orbit of the city.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a space that's 1,500 feet from the one from the billboard that's where Cottle Critters are, mm-hmm. and the on-ramp. But there's some interpretation as to where the vector thing comes in, where they mm-hmm. measure that from. Mm-hmm. And so we've told, and then it leaves this little tiny spot in between those circles that could fit in their parking lot. But we've asked them to go to UDOT and get a letter that says that, yes, they are measuring it from the right spot. Because before the times I've measured it, I thought there was no room.
Good.
So
I've measured it, too. I didn't think there was room.
Yeah, I didn't think there was.
Anyway,
I'm not a math major. You know.
Was it a tangent? I didn't mean to get on a tangent with billboards. I was should have.
No, but it's
I'm sorry.
Interesting.
Yes, it is.
That's kind of why I'm here to update you and let you know that see all the weird things that we have to do all the time. So the Planning Commission also wants us to start working on the parking code. I think I have the wrong dates in here on this one because it looks like I duplicated that one and I don't think they're at the same time. I think we planned on those coming. Second, so I'll have to update those before you send those slides up to you. And then, after we've gotten the form-based code done, gotten the sign code and parking code done, we're going to tackle conditional uses. And we need to get all the conditional uses out of the code. We're trying to figure out how to take those uses back to the more general headings,
yep.
so that it'll be a little bit easier for us to administer, mm-hmm. and then determine which uses we want to be prohibited, which ones we want to be permitted, and then what standards for the specific uses that we want to put in. So just like we changed the code a couple weeks ago for social services and then established what those standards would be for those social services, that's what we want to do with all of the uses.
Mm-hmm.
Our use table in commercial and industrial zones is probably has 200-300 different uses, so it's going to take a little while.
Mm.
This is awesome. Which, if any, consulting help? Not that you necessarily need it, just curious.
I haven't. The only thing is the original stuff for the form based code. We're doing everything else in-house. So. And then we need to resurrect the subdivision ordinance. I still have all of your corrections to input. And then other miscellaneous code changes that we might bring forward just as we sprinkle in there and find a little bit of time on the agendas. We've been asked to look at private golf course netting, make sure that we can approve that. I know that you might be talking about that or have been talking about that to some people. Some questions about driveway approaches and maybe some modifications to the standards on whether you can heat your driveway approach or not, or what materials your driveway approach could take. So that's something that's been raised that we might want to consider. We've been approached by Bird Scooters, so that may come sooner than later,
mm-hmm.
if we decide we want to do that in a ordinance, or mm-hmm. do we want to just do it by an agreement. We're still contemplating how to do that best. Some improvements to the site plan and special events. We recently took over special events. Public Works was processing them before. So we've taken that. We gave them the park reservation, so we took the events, kind of a little exchange of duties there. And as Mackenzie has been going through that, she has some suggestions of some updates to the code that would make it a lot easier to administer. We've also had some business licensing and code enforcement issues that have come up from Sandra and Stacy. One of the things is our code, there's a lot of places in the other code, not the land use part of the code, that say still have the old language about being a Class C misdemeanor on some of these penalties, mm-hmm. the civil penalties. So I've went through and pulled out everywhere that it says those, and we can go through and fix those so they all go through the enforcement hearing program. So those are, this is an ever-growing list down here. Hope I haven't forgotten any that have been raised, but if you have, just, if I have, let me know.
One thing I think you want to add is your appellate proceedings. That still needs to be cleaned up. Appeal authority,
yes.
Hearing officer, how you're going to handle those.
That one's in this.
Code enforcement piece? Okay.
So just as a reminder to the council, these are the Planning Commission's priorities. We have a list of assignments that have come up through the retreat. You've given us an assignment, Ted, just one that comes to mind, about working on general plan amendments to talk about aesthetics and and landscaping throughout the city and some other things. And so we do have other assignment lists in addition to, this is a great summary of the Planning Commission. I appreciate you putting this together, Sherry, because it helps us.
It's awesome.
But we do have a lot of other priorities. When you say, I hope I haven't missed anything, I just wanted the council to know, we have other lists of things that you've told us you want us to do that we haven't forgotten. So those will get plugged into the calendar before the end of the year too. We, you know, including water and stormwater master plans, which will become general plan elements. Mm-hmm. Those have to go through hearings and things. Those the things that Bo and Collins have been working on for us. And there's lots of other things in the periphery here.
And this was just specific to code amendments that the Planning Commission wants to work on. And that's in between all of the other applications we get that we get to process. So some weeks we left a little bit of wiggle room in here on the in this July and August area because we knew that we might get development applications and we didn't want to fill up an agenda if we had three development applications that were ready to be processed and a couple of conditional use permits and still do chapter 8 on that same meeting. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to build in a little cushion there just in case we needed a meeting for more pressing because those things, in our opinion, come first because we have a certain amount of time that we have to process those and under the state code. So we want to make sure that we're meeting all of those deadlines and being responsive to the applicants that we have. I did want to just talk about the water efficient landscape ordinance. I have been working on that pretty much nonstop for the last week or so in between the other duties as assigned as those things come in. 2 weeks ago, Allie McKenzie and I went to Weaver Basin and we sat in on the Flip Your Strip class that they make you take if you would like to participate in that program. In order for the City of North Salt Lake citizens to participate in the Flip Your Strip, we have to adopt water efficient landscaping ordinances. So they've given us the model code. I have looked at lots of other cities' codes, as I usually do. I try to pick the best stuff from the best places and then add the stuff that I think is important that I think everybody else missed. And I think we usually get the best ordinance, and it seems like I always get plagiarized after that.
Sure.
Can I throw in something there?
Mm-hmm.
It was probably going to be in my mayor comments, but listening to other mayors, councils talk about Flip the Strip, it's almost impossible to qualify. They said it's so laborious, you know, it's almost not worth doing, at least from a point of view of trying to get reimbursed from Weaver Water.
Well, they had the class was full, and the classes have 60 people in it, or 60 property owners can register for the class. So it was pretty interesting. I learned a lot of things. One of the things I wanted to be there for is because I wanted to see, okay, what are they telling the citizens when they're coming to talk about this? Are they giving them enough information about design or about plant material, or are they just kind of concentrating on sprinkler heads or whatever? So I do have some suggestions for Weaver Basin. There was one of the things that kind of bothered me was in the class, they said, okay, about halfway through, those of you who aren't going to put any plant material in your park strip and you're just going to put rocks in, you can go ahead and leave. And then, after that, when they started talking about plant material, that was when they talked about weed control.
Oh.
And I was kind of like, well, those people that already left and just put rocks, didn't hear any of this. So I thought that was a little bit interesting. But it did give me some ideas about the design, and I think that's some of the stuff that's missing. I noticed that, I think it's, I want to say it's Clearfield. They must have hired somebody to do a guidebook, a design guidebook for park strips and for landscapes, so that people can look at it and get their ideas from there, rather than trying to codify, okay, here's how you design something, because that's really hard to do, to codify that, unless you just want every park strip to look exactly the same with exactly the same rock colors. Mm. You know? So that gave us some feedback on that. I do have the first draft of the ordinance done. I've passed it out to all of our department heads and to our development review committee, as well as some of the other departments. I sent it to our SWIP inspector because I want him to look at the SWIP regulations for when we delay installation of landscaping over winters. Soil still needs to be stabilized. And we will continually keep working on that until we get the best draft to bring forward to the City Council.
So this is what we're looking at, the ordinance saying that people in North Salt Lake, like new builders, have to do this.
Yes, or if you wanted to take out your whole yard and take out all your lawn and put in xeriscape, this will give you guidelines on how to do that, what kind of irrigation system conversions you need to make.
How much is 35% of a landscaped area?
I'm going to have some good.
And then I also want to know what 15% is for the commercial.
Yeah. So one of the things that I don't like about the model code, these are the things that it has to have, and these are the easy things to say. You know, we drip irrigation when you're not in the lawn areas, have irrigation in zones. And I was kind of like, doesn't everybody design their systems that way?
Sure.
Basically, they don't want a drip line on the same line that has an impact heads because the pressures are not the same, and then they don't work right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was in the class. They actually did tell you how to do it if you wanted to do the math, but they just encouraged you to change those systems out. And they were really good in the class about showing the different kinds of sprinkler heads and how to convert them over to drip,
mm-hmm.
and the different kinds that there were and the conversions that you can make on each one of the different kinds of heads that you already have. So I thought that was really valuable in the class. But a couple of the things that they want, or that they're asking for, they're not saying that you have to meet these. They're saying you have to, these are the recommendations. So when I've looked at the other codes, not everybody that has already been approved to be in the Flip the Strip program have these exact regulations. And it comes because it's different. So the lawn, they're saying on new single family homes, should only be 35% of the landscaped area. So that's not 35% of the lot, it's 35% of the area after you take out
the house
and the driveway. And you take out the areas that you didn't touch at all because you're leaving them in native vegetation and you're not irrigating them. So it can get really, really small. And then 15% in the commercial or multifamily section of the landscaped area, except for some, you can make an exception for recreational areas. They put in something for throwing a frisbee or walking your dogs or whatever. But in our commercial and multifamily, our minimum is 10% landscaping. So you're talking about 15% of 10% can be lawn. This is pretty small. So I made some graphics. And I just went ahead and picked a few random houses in town and went through them and saw what we could do. So this is up here on Eagle Point Drive. This lot comes clear up to here. I don't know if you can see the line, but it comes up on the hillside. So this is why I picked this lot, because this is an example of some of our hillside lots. The lot size is 22,000 and change, so a little over a half acre. The lawn area, they have 6,100 square feet, which is 27% of the lot. The home and driveway is 4,900 square feet, or 22% of the lot. This native area out here is 8,000, almost 8,200 square feet, 36%. And then the other landscape, little landscape beds that they have, I mean, this is a really nice house, and I think they've done a really good job of xeriscaping their front yard. So their other landscaping, they have about 3,500 square feet. But if you looked at the improved landscaping, which that would be the total of the lawn area and the other landscapes, would be 9,600 square feet. And 35% of that would be 3,300 square feet. So this lawn area is 6,200 square feet. So it'd be about half of that that they would be allowed to have in lawn.
I was also going to freak out about this because we chose small lots so we could have lots of grass. My lot is half as big as that lot. And one third of our backyard is grass. So, like, I'm freaking out.
Do you, because you get to adopt the ordinance.
Are you interested in having the discussion right now? Or?
Let me show you the rest of the slides. And then, because I think that'll help give you some more context that we have to look at all different kinds of lots. But this
are they looking at different kinds of grass?
Yeah, that's my question. Right now.
They're not
interested.
Because
if it's any lawn or turf that is watered with spray heads or above ground water and not a drip system, it counts as lawn.
Really?
Because there's no doubt that there's different types of grass that don't need near the water.
That requires the most, and so why wouldn't they consider that?
I think it's because
try to kill it.
Get people who maybe this is the second or third buyer doesn't know what kind of grass they have, and they just think they need lots of water, and so they just keep watering it a lot. In fact, I have on one of the next slides, I have one of our worst water offenders, I think. But anyway, when I looked at the, if you included the native areas that they didn't touch in the total landscape of the lot and did 35% of that, we would be at about 6,200 square feet, which is about what they have in lawn.
Okay. Yeah.
What if it was like percentage of front of the front yard or something like that instead?
So I did some calculations. I personally, from an administrative perspective on what we're going to have to review when a single family lot comes in with a site plan review, it would be so much easier if we could come up with a number that's just a percentage of the lot. It's easy to do, it's across the board, it makes more sense to me. But I wanted to see what 35% of the total lot would be, 7,900 and change square feet. 25% would be about 5,600 square feet. So they would have reduced this by about 500 square feet, maybe this area up here in the front yard. So that's one house. So then I wanted to look at some smaller lots. So these are our 5,000 square foot lots. Actually, I mean, this lot is 6,500 square feet. And this was a great example because we have this house that put in lawn, and this house put in no grass. There is not one blade of grass on this lot.
And it's
like
fully
this.
Landscaped. Oh,
and
yep.
It's beautiful.
Got it.
Mm-hmm. The Google Earth even drove by already in the car.
Where are, I don't know where this is.
This is in the ridge. So
okay.
There are new lots up here above the high wall. On Miller
above
Avenue.
The gravel pit.
And
those
I would encourage you to take a drive through the ridge. Yes. The houses are just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're doing a great job on a lot of these. But I thought this was a good comparison to see how a xeriscape lawn could be done, or a xeriscape yard, excuse me, and how it looks pretty nice. I kind of like it myself. So anyway, on this particular lot, 6,500 square feet, the home and the driveway take up about 2,900 square feet. The lawn area, they have about 2,000 square feet of lawn. Is that what you said you had, about 2,000?
I don't know.
Okay. I'll do your house tomorrow.
I can't look at, I'm not good at guessing numbers.
We'll publicly shame you.
I want to be publicly shamed. And here's the thing, like we poured an extra patio and we built,
we're in the right place.
We built like a patio. Like,
yeah.
We should not be limited.
So
I get all the lawn I want.
Other landscaping on this lot comes to about 1,500 square feet. The total landscaping is 3,600 square feet. So 35% of their landscaping would they give them only 1,273 square feet. The backyard, just the lawn in the backyard is 1,500 square feet. So I can see it would be really easy to lose those front yards because it's not space you really use. You don't go out there and throw a frisbee on these little tiny lots. But when you have kids, you want to have a little bit of lawn.
Or dogs.
Or dogs. I forgot about dogs because I don't have a dog.
The dog kills half the backyard, so then you have to count on his grass.
I'm not responsible enough to own a dog. But I wanted to look at what 35% of the lot would be in this case, would be about 2,200 square feet, which is more than they have now, or 25% of the lot, which would have been about 1,600 square feet, which would basically be their backyard and not their front yard. So they would really just need to decide where they wanted to put that lawn, where it could be most used, where it could be most valuable to them. But I do encourage you to drive by this and take a look at that because it's really cool. And on my aerial, this is doesn't show up because we blew it up, but when I zoom in on it on our near map program, these are all rocks. So this little thing is rock design. These are all different rocks in their backyard, different colors, and it looks really cool from Google Earth. So, and I really like their plant choices in the park strip and the thing they did with the two different colors of rock.
People who see us, they don't have any friends.
Improves that street appeal of that house.
I suppose
this is the house next door from Street View.
That's what
you can tell it, right?
Nice, but I think this looks nicer than this. Just my opinion, but.
What are the two white
just a Google Earth.
Oh, Google Earth.
Oh, oh, these are thing. I thought they were fancy rocks, and I'm like, that's weird.
Oh, I see. Those are the arrows.
I was thinking, what are they doing across the sidewalk?
I have a question.
I thought they put a bench there.
Our HOA stipulates how much grass we're supposed to have.
We can't have that anymore.
HOAs are not allowed to do that anymore.
Right.
And so this ordinance that we will potentially pass will nullify any HOA ordinances.
I think we have to ask our attorney if it nullifies that.
Yes.
I've had lots of discussions with people at the state. I don't know how a state law can impair an existing contract, right? Like CC&R. So I think there will be some interesting battles about that.
But I think that would be a good topic of conversation to bring up with your HOA and say, hey, the state legislature said you shouldn't be doing this. We would like to have our CC&Rs amended to comply with state code.
So if an HOA is not compliant with state code, are they then... held accountable to that?
Well, this law can't be retroactive.
Yeah.
But new HOA.
So it's grandfathered.
So it's only any new construction or landscape within.
You can't take away already acquired rights.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I just think it gives you the opportunity to have a discussion with the homeowners and the homeowners association about amending their CC&Rs so that we can be more water efficient even in our existing development.
Oh, sure. So it's a worthwhile effort for sure.
I did have the fire department tell me a few months ago that on an old building, I said, well, that's grandfathered in, and they said, well, grandpa just died.
We've gotten in trouble from the HOA for our front yard.
That's funny.
I love the one that you've got circled there has a whole bunch more space than the one that you don't. So if you take a percentage of whatever, the one on the top of those two can only have half as much as one on the bottom because they have less space.
Right.
Is there going to be something in the regulation that covers that too?
That was my thought as to why the percentage should be on the total boundary of the lot and not on the improved area of landscaping, because then it makes it proportionally fair. So it also then, maybe you're not supposed to overbuild your lot. This house might be a little bit bigger than you want. But they put in great landscaping that they don't need to mow every week. They just need to spray for their weeds at the beginning of the season.
But there's something to be said for kids that can play on the grass as opposed to get skin knees every time they...
There's room for all types of landscaping, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So.
I like the idea of percentage of lot instead of percentage of landscaping.
Well, we can call it the Natalie exception.
The Natalie exception.
The green thumb.
This was one I did for our first conversation with Beaver Basin when I was trying to understand what they were meaning by 35% of the lot and 35% of the landscaped areas. So this example is a house that is under construction, and we had a house plan come in. This is over on Fox Hill Road or Fox Hill Circle. Under the 35% of the landscaped area, and I considered everything that didn't have the house and the driveway on it, landscaped area. Couldn't put sod in here in this first area because it doesn't reach 8 feet until we get to about right there. But this was the amount of landscape that they would get on 35% of the landscaped area, which would be about 2,676 square feet. 35% of the lot still would preserve all of this hillside area. And they could do this in native vegetation or in some other kind of vegetation and then have a little more yard. Obviously, people might put it all in the backyard and choose to put that up here, but I was just trying to keep for ease of discussion so I could understand that. So this is a, another example. And then this is an example on a commercial site. So this is our Eaglewood Plaza building. In my opinion, this doesn't have very much grass. So we have a 5-foot park strip here that has grass in it with trees. And then we basically have the trail comes along here. And we have a little bit of grass here and a little bit of grass up there on the other side of the trail. In this particular category, this lot is just over 2 acres. The minimum landscaping that we require is 10%, which is 8,816. They have provided 24% of their lot as landscaping. And as you can see, that's counting all these little islands and the trees and all of these planting beds. And then the turf is about 6,500 square feet, which is about 30% of the landscape area. So we were basically asking for 15% of the landscape area. Or this amount of landscaping for the lawn, for the turf, as a percentage of the entire lot is 7%. So we would remove all of this lawn on the park strip because it's not 8 feet wide under the new ordinance. They wouldn't put in lawn here. You just would put in planting beds under the trees on that. And that would take about 1,179 square feet. What this brought up to me is the disparity between our code and other cities' codes. Because when I looked at other cities' codes, Farmington requires 20% of their lot to be landscaped. West Jordan, that was just an outlier, so but they have between 25% and 40%.
So 20% compared to 10%
would
mean that
they'd get
twice as much grass.
Exactly. Yes.
Well, landscaping is not necessarily grass.
No.
So in their landscaped area, though, when they are requiring a minimum of 40% landscaping on their multifamily projects, they would get to have 15% of that 40%. We get 15% of the minimum, which is 10%, or maybe they give us more, they get 24%, so now we get 15% of 24%.
My head is spinning now.
What is... multifamily. What's our percentage? Is it the same as commercial?
It's at 10. Yeah. So those are the questions that's the policy question that you guys are going to be.
And the 8-foot strip is, why is that a number?
Because the sprinkler heads that you water with usually have about 8 feet of coverage.
I see.
And they don't want you watering the sidewalk.
Got it.
Okay.
So park strips are.
And yeah, they don't want anything in the park strip, except for drip irrigation.
And no more grass.
No more grass.
What about like trees? Trees are still
trees
good,
are
right?
Trees are fine.
I like trees.
And trees are good.
Trees are the answer.
One of the things
children
in,
are the future.
In my little studies here, looking at these different codes, is a lot of codes, something that we don't have, is they'll have a requirement for a tree for every X number of square feet of landscaping that you have, total landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have, you know, some codes, it was one per... Let's see, so in West Jordan it was one tree for every 2,000 square feet of landscaping. We have a different standard, I think, in some of these other cities that were, well, I think it was Clearfield, it might have been one per 500 square feet.
Mm-hmm.
So for every 500 square feet, you have to have a tree
mm-hmm.
somewhere on that property. But when I looked at the different codes, Clearfield required between 10 and 15% of the lot be landscaped. Centerville was 10 to 15 on their commercial, multifamily was 30 to 40. West Bountiful, their range was 15 to 25, and Bountiful was 15 to 25. So I think that may be something that we need to look at. Are we too low
mm-hmm.
on our required landscaping? And then decide from there how to conserve.
Mm-hmm.
And look at that. And that's why I put these diagrams together so you can have a better
where are you at?
What it might mean.
Sorry, where are you at with the Planning Commission on this?
So this goes to the Planning Commission next week. So they haven't seen this. They haven't, but this slide will be used for them as well next week to kind of start that dialogue. And they'll make a recommendation, I think, on that policy. And it would be interesting to see how the dialogue goes. But
is it weird?
I want to get it before you so you can start thinking about it.
Is it weird if we go to Planning Commission meetings?
No.
I never thought it was weird, but when I was on the Planning Commission, but
you just can't be on the front row. Go on.
Yeah.
I always sit in the back row.
Yeah, I'm in the back going.
Rolling your eyes.
You're not either. I haven't seen you there once.
No.
Yeah. You have any? That's pretty much my department update.
Yeah.
Yay.
Thank you.
Why don't we break? And we'll maybe start the meeting more on time.
And I took up all the rest of the time, sorry. So you didn't get to your action.
It's okay, you're asking questions.
You can do that in the later meeting.
Yep.
So tell me what you want to do. I mean, not right now.
Yeah.
But
oh,
yeah, that's absolutely bonsai trees in their house.
Yes.
Oh, then they don't need any other trees.
Sorry.
Yeah. When we met on Saturday morning at our
well,
you just.